Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Knollcast. Bud, we'll just use this as kind of a general spring update to talk with people about what we were able to glean from the first scrimmage. We'll also dedicate some time to bringing people up to speed with some of the most recent visitors on campus. A ton of talent continues to make its way to Tallahassee, and just some various different other things that we'll point out throughout the episode. So excited to get into this. As always, want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, perfect partner for us, and somebody that we look forward to working with moving forward. So fortunate to have the sponsors that we do, fortunate to have the listeners that we do. And Bud, we'll jump into today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks, Louisiana. A great sponsor. You know, we're actually closing in on 2,000 five-star reviews.
That is remarkable. Really remarkable.
That is almost double all other FSU shows combined. So when we say, hey, we're the number one FSU podcast by a mile, that's one of the metrics that we use. Like, we're really up there. And I don't know if you saw this, Ingram, pretty cool. And this is a huge, huge thanks to our listeners. There were only three shows in the, I think, the sports top 20 or the college sports top 20 that focused on a single team. Us, Kentucky Sports Radio, which is a huge website, and an MGO blog, which
is probably timely, served by perhaps a recent run in the basketball tournament. So,
and they have Harbaugh, who constantly just says incredible stuff. So, you know, it's he's always pretty awesome. So, yeah, we are 29 reviews, 5 stars away from 2,000 5 stars. That is really cool. And our blue chip percentage, by the way, is like 99. That's pretty good. So we appreciate that, listeners. All right, you want to go scrimmage first? What do you want to do?
Yeah, we'll do a little overall broad scrimmage recap, and then we can talk on some of the particular points of spring from there.
Sure. Okay, so the scrimmage was ugly, basically. I've talked to people who were there who always shoot me straight. Look, a lot of it was ugly because it was the first scrimmage of spring, which is typically the case. A lot of it also was ugly because of how many people you had injured and held out. You know, Marvin Wilson didn't play. Josh Kando, 3 starting offensive linemen, I believe. Juwan Williams, Eberle / Boselli, and Minshew were all held out. Obviously, Nyquan Murray didn't play. And that, you know, that led to some issues. This defense is a high-pressure defense. They want to get upfield. They want to affect the quarterback. And they do not want the opposition to go on sustained, slow, matriculate the ball down the field type drives. They want to get negative plays on you. They want to get turnovers if they can, which, as listeners of the show know, turnovers have a huge luck component. But they, you know, they think they can affect that some. We're not going to all of a sudden start lying to you and say, you know, they have a total control over turnovers, because they do not. Or, you know, if they give up a big play, all right, the offense gets the ball back. And I was told that Brian Burns was just in the backfield on almost every single play. So for those of y'all who saw the clip of Burns getting beat in an Oklahoma-style blocking drill, yeah, that
drill really suits Burns' strength, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You want to have him against a guy that outweighs him by 100 pounds in a confined area. This defense is going to put Brian Burns on the edge, and I think we had a buy or sell question brought to you by Resolution Home Loans that asked how many sacks Burns would have, and it was, I think the number was 10.
I think we both went over.
And absolutely. I feel even better about that after this scrimmage, for sure. Now, the defense did a good job. It's not all rosy on that side, though. Couple things. They need to find somebody who can play the star position, obviously. I think the guy who they would like to play that is Hamza Nasruddin. That's sort of the half safety, half backer position. You know, we'll see how quickly he can pick things up and come along. Also, I was told that despite the fact that, you know, the offensive line was allowing a ton of pressure, I mean, if you're missing 3 starters, that's not a huge surprise. And Florida State's defensive line is very good. Despite that the linebackers are still, quote, by far the worst position on the team. And I was told the only one who looked decent was Jackson. And that's not like super high praise for Jackson. It's just that he looked okay. I think they're going to be protected a little bit, dude, because this defense doesn't ask a ton of the linebackers relative to some of the other positions. It's very much just instincts and go. But they are standing out now as a continued position of weakness. So We didn't get a buy or sell question on this, but I am not buying the sort of, you know, helium, if you will, or the spring optimism that's coming out about these linebackers. Not yet. They are still a major liability on this defense.
Still an issue, absolutely. That's really, really frustrating. I almost look at linebackers like wide receivers. Like you don't necessarily have to have elite players, but be where you are located geographically for us not to have a solid pool of kids from South Georgia or Florida that are able to play the linebacker position at a high level is a source of frustration, and it's been something that's been an issue for it's not a new issue, I'll put it that way.
Defensively, some other standouts. Cyrus Fagan had a nice scrimmage. He's been looking good. That's really encouraging to hear. I think that's a name. You know, we always talk about these sort of forgotten sophomores, right? Where guys come in as freshmen, highly touted. Maybe they don't do anything as a true freshman, and all of a sudden they have a big-time breakout sophomore year. Fagan's looked very good. Levante Taylor, this is his money year. He's looked great all spring. They actually have, I think, pretty good talent at corner overall. And so they're able to move some guys around. And I think there are some times where you could see some guys at corner playing some at safety. And mm-hmm. and that makes a lot of sense because this defense does, you know, when they play a lot of these match quarters coverage, this is kind of hyper-technical, so just bear with me for a second. But when you're in quarters and everybody has a quarter of the field against vertical, so if you have like three or four guys releasing vertically, then the coverage basically converts to man-to-man. And so you need your safeties to be able to cover man-to-man very well. The safeties kind of protect the linebackers in this defense, which is, you know, something pretty interesting. Some defenses, the linebackers, you know, help protect the safeties somewhat. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a corner or two make plays. DeMarcus Christmas, this is also his money year. He had a nice day, obviously going against backup offensive lineman. I think you would expect that. I think you got some nice things out of Wally Ime at defensive end. So that's good there. You're going to need him. We'll talk about a couple of guys in a later question, I know. And on offense, I was told it was the DJ Matthews show. I mean, just this offense gets him in space. He is incredibly quick, and basically nobody could cover him. That doesn't mean he's catching like 50-yard bombs every time, but just it's really nice to have a safety blanket, you know, if you're the QB that you know, okay, hey, if I got a one-on-one here, almost like Edelman for the Patriots. You know, it's basically every time Brady sees that, it's like, oh, we got Edelman on the linebacker, bam, 7 yards. Cool. Take the profit. You know, nobody goes broke taking a profit, that type of thing. That's cool. And then one thing I was told, this is interesting, I think because Florida State just didn't emphasize it and or taught it so poorly, the read option stuff is an issue, and it's coming along, I think, more slowly than they would like as far as making the right reads on the read option and knowing when to give, knowing when to keep. And look, the ability to do that, you know, the zone read stuff is pretty key. So they're going to have to keep working on that, obviously, because you don't want the QB making the incorrect reads on that. And I think they'll see a lot of improvement on that as well. You know, I guess we'll see. And then also I'll say that the backs are really competing. I don't know that Patrick is a clear two behind Akers. I think it's Akers and then a whole lot of competition behind him.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to see how it plays out. We've talked a lot about it. Obviously, it's been one of the stories of spring that you have four really competent backs, but all four guys haven't done themselves any disservice during spring, let me put it that way. You've got, obviously, Akers is where the story starts, and that'll be the guy that consumes the vast majority of the opportunities there, but really interesting to see what kind of rotation and how the three other guys are ultimately used and how they're incorporated into the offense.
Quick little update here. Marvin Wilson will be out for spring with an MCL injury. That's good that it's not an ACL. We have a couple of orthopedic docs who listen to the show and who like kind of chime in. And they said, look, that's an injury that should not keep him out for too long. He should be able to do, you know, some of the summer conditioning and obviously be back in time for fall ball. With no complications. We also had a few people suggest that Marvin Wilson should now switch to honey grilled chicken as opposed to honey fried chicken. Marvin, of course, was the guy who famously said how much he loved the honey fried chicken on ESPN on signing day 2017. But
people sure seem to be consumed with Marvin Wilson's body composition. I don't know where the real concern for that comes. I mean,
we get like a rumor about Marvin every week. I'm like, man,
right? That's what I'm saying. People are seemingly real worried about how in shape this defensive tackle prospect is. I don't know reason for that concern, but it seems to be a repeating point that some have.
This is something that people asked about, like how close is the quarterback battle right now? I think we both agree that right now it's not close at all.
We'll say that the scrimmage didn't make it any closer. How about that?
Yeah.
There was nothing in the scrimmage to make us recalculate what we think as far as who stands in the line of priority as far as quarterbacks go.
If they have another scrimmage like this, y'all need to retire that popular Huckman Hive hashtag.
I don't know if there's a whole lot more to take from the scrimmage there. I appreciate the recap provided. And we'll, continue to bring people up to speed and give them all that we can as far as information and what we're able to take from the program as spring progresses. Why don't we take this moment to thank our friends at For the Table Restaurant Group and Madison Social. Want to remind people of the event that we'll be doing, the pregame kickoff at Township there. And just want to thank everybody for their support, and the number of t-shirts that were ordered were fantastic and humbling, and look forward to having the opportunity to meet a lot of y'all, talk ball, and have our first little kind of get-together. Want to clear up something. It's not a live podcast. I don't know if maybe we misstated that a month ago or so, but just want to just clear up what the actual event is, and I look forward to it all the same, but I've seen a couple comments out there about us maybe doing a live podcast. Not to say that that's off the table, but it's not something that would take place 10 days from now, put it that way.
Absolutely. Madison Social is awesome. Township is going to be great. We can't wait to see y'all there. I think we're going to have a couple hundred come throughout the day. So that is awesome. I'm sure we'll have a lot of walk-ups. We had people asking, hey, can we, if we didn't buy the shirt, can we still come? Absolutely. Yeah.
It is not a private event. Yeah, please do come.
Now, absolutely. What you cannot get is free beer if you didn't buy the shirt. But that's we very much thank y'all for buying the shirts. That's really cool, supporting us. And I think we may have another shirt come up too somewhat soon. I have another idea. I don't know if I want to release a second shirt so contemporaneously with the first one, but do kind of have a cool idea stashed away. So, yeah, pretty neat. Man, I don't know that maybe we should release a shirt because it's Madso is awesome, and we like this tempo that this new team runs at. Maybe we should release shirts at tempo.
Absolutely, yes. But just two little quick things, not necessarily related to the current state of the team or roster composition or anything, but Bobby Bowden back at the football facility is a nice thing to see. Interesting to see how Taggart has incorporated him into the program fairly aggressively. Bowden also, I don't know what role, but is also featured on some of the camp flyers coming up. So it just looks like he'll have a more pronounced, prominent role in the program, and that's not going to dictate any wins or losses or anything like that come Saturday in the fall, obviously, but just good to see that there's a healthy relationship between those two, and it appears to be only a positive thing is going to come from Bobby being around the program at this point in the game and having a positive interaction with the university and the football program.
Oh, there's no doubt, man. That's really cool to have Bobby back. There were some good interactions with he and the prior guy, but also some ones that were maybe a little less than good. It's great to have him back. Like, do the kids know who he is?
I'm sure they know the name. I don't know if they necessarily have an appreciation for the career or anything else.
I bet a lot of them don't know the name. Like if they don't know Charlie Ward and Chris Winkie, I bet you a lot of them don't know Bowden's name. But I think you probably see him around the facility enough, that he's there. On the walls, he's there in the lobby, obviously in the museum part, and throughout the program,
name is on the stadium,
stained glass window, name on the stadium. I think most of the kids have probably, like, once they get to Florida State, have probably, if they didn't know, have asked, like, who's that guy? As recruits, certainly I don't think they knew who he is, but that is great to have him around because it shows tradition. It shows, hey, what we're asking you to do is not unprecedented. Florida State has played to an elite standard you know, all your life and the vast majority of your parents' life too, most likely. So that is really cool to have him around.
Great to have Bobby around. Still waiting to win the Powerball or something like that, Bud, so I can personally announce a Mickey Andrews football facility or something like that.
I like that.
So hopefully there comes a time where we're able to put Mickey's name on something in a official capacity. The one other thing I want to mention real briefly, for those Florida State fans that are kind of our age, no greater thing to see than Peter Warrick being able to get his jersey retired. His number will still be available in certain circumstances to be used. But one of the most exciting players to ever play college football, just a guy that, again, if you're above the age of 29, I would say you have some pretty vivid memories of him being one of the most dynamic players of his age, and just a great to see him being recognized for what he was, which was really one of the better players to play in Garnet and Gold.
Absolutely, man. It's just that is awesome. Also, another really cool thing, Odell going into the Florida State Hall of Fame, well deserved. And you know, they seem to be making the right moves, man. And you know, getting the fan support, embracing the tradition, I think is something that is good. There's no downside to this. It's all profit. By the way, something that potentially does have some downside, I don't know if you saw this, but Phil Steele ran the projections using the NCAA method of calculating strength of schedule. And you know who has the toughest schedule in the nation?
Yeah, I do know. It's happens to be the subject matter of the Nullcast, I believe.
Yeah. So when we get these angry emails, I can't believe you guys say this team could lose, you know,
right,
more than two games.
Every time we mention it, exactly. Yeah.
Hardest schedule in the nation. That's not easy. Upcoming / recent recruiting visits. Let's just hit these real quickly. Kavarius Couch, one of the top running backs in the nation out of North Carolina. Trickweezy Bridges, who is a elite defensive back out of Alabama. Will Putnam, very important visit here. I think state champion wrestler. He's out of Tampa, plays for Plant. Elite level guard. And I think he and Lucas, as far as I can tell, are the top two guards on Florida State's board. So it's very important that they were able to get him up there, kind of show him the program, introduce him more to Greg Fry, although certainly I think Fry was already recruiting him some at Michigan. And he absolutely loved his visit. I'm not saying Florida State's in the driver's seat for him, but getting him on multiple visits will absolutely be key. Have to do a better job in Tampa than Florida State has done recently. John Dunmore came up again. That's a second visit in a month. I think he's probably number two on their receiver board to Ladson. He might be number one as far as the most realistic guy that they're going to sign, unless they can get Ladson on another visit. But Ladson did come too. I think we talked about that last episode. Also coming from Chaminade, Cam Williams, Miami defensive end commit. Not entirely sure where he is on FSU's board, but certainly a prospect in whom they're interested. Sam Howell, North Carolina quarterback, one of the top kids on their board, certainly kind of a little squatty. I mean, 6 foot, 2 1/4.
Looks, Baker Mayfield isn't a crazy comparison just as far as general appearance and body composition.
Oh, sure. I mean, maybe a little thicker, but yeah, and playing style, certainly. I mean, has the ability to scramble around, big time arm. You know, could Tyson Fomacon maybe be coming back this spring using an official visit? That's something we're going to be keeping an eye on to see if they can cement those dates down. Florida State is not looking to do a ton early official visits. This year, you can take officials in the spring and into early summer. I've been told for the most part, unless you're like a clear early enrollee and you want to make your decision, they're not looking to do a bunch of those. But for certain kids, they will. Devontae Dobbs, as well as his teammate, Jalen Barnett, coming down from Michigan. Dobbs, one of the top offensive linemen in the nation, and Barnett is an elite-level DB. Barnett's actually committed to Michigan State. No relation to Harlan Barnett, as far as I know, but Barnett obviously did recruit Barnett. I'm going to stop saying Barnett now. Sean Dollars, one of the top running backs in the nation, a kid who you can put in a slot, you can hand the ball to him, really nice speed, get him in space. He's at a Modern Day, which is a powerhouse program in
decent
California.
Program out west.
Probably the only program last year who could have beaten IMG, I think. And I think last year they would have probably spanked IMG. This year they are going to play. I think it'll be a little bit closer of a game. But Modern Day is absolutely loaded. Jaden Daniels, one of the top quarterbacks in the nation, also came through on a visit. Obviously, those guys are tied in with the Ground Zero program, which produced Jaden Woodby. Ground Zero is kind of a training program there, as well as they play various 7-on-7 events. Hey, West Coast Noles, man. Ingram, this is now three top quarterbacks on Florida State's board, best we can tell, visiting Florida State in March slash April. That's really good, man. They have done a tremendous job of getting talent on campus. I had to have a laugh at some of these folks on Twitter who, you can follow recruiting a little bit too closely. You know, I'm not saying, like, obviously this is maybe bad for me to say because I make my living on people carrying my recruiting, but you can kind of get lost in the details and not see the big picture. And the people who were flipping out that, hey, this is not a great junior day. Well, the next day they had like 6, 4, and 5 stars, guy. It was just the people who were worried that Willie Taggart would not be able to get kids to visit Florida State when he was getting kids to visit Oregon from Tampa. I don't think he's going to have any problem getting kids to visit Tallahassee when he's the head coach at Florida State, and he's not. Not had any problem so far, and I wouldn't expect it. So,
not only does he not have a problem, I mean, we've mentioned this on the last podcast, the talent that has come every 48 hours, you have massive player come and take a look at the school. I would say that you have a desired narrative that you're trying to cram almost any information into. If at this point you're worried about the amount of kids and really elite kids that have Florida State as one of their options, their legitimate options at this point in the recruiting cycle.
All right, let's go to questions.
First question here, addressed to Eggplant and Spud. So, solid. No savory meal is complete without 2 to 3 shakes of Louisiana hot sauce. Unfortunately, I live in Northern California, so the prospect of purchasing property is one that's still years away. Unless Resolution Home Loans can help me out with a $200,000 down payment, one is required to have in order to purchase a reasonable home here. Tough housing market out west, depending on where you are. Anyway, to his question, now that the important items are out of the way, I want to inquire further on the statement you have made in recruiting rankings are bad. In which direction do they tend to slide as more tape on the player is available? Obviously, teams rely on their own internal scouting departments. So are the schools that already have 10-plus recruits committed this early in the cycle ahead of the game, or are they just not know which 2 to 3 star recruits that they want and are able to get them early? Also, are the early offers only given to players that the school would allow to commit immediately, or do they offer pretty much everyone that they might want and tell certain players that they won't accept a commitment at this time?
No, they are not going to accept a commit from every single, and this is not just Florida State, this is just every school in general. They are not going to accept a commit from every kid they offer. Some of these offers that they send out, I think Saban talked about this recently too, are not necessarily committable. It's like, hey, you have an offer from us, provided that you come to camp and ball out, show us in person what we think we see on film. Other offers are absolutely committable. In fact, I know that schools typically distribute a sheet that the coaches, make up between themselves, so they can review it when a kid walks up, and they can say, okay, this kid is listed as a take or as a talk, right? Or you continue to talk to him, or if he's listed as a take, you would take his commitment right now if he wants to come.
Other offers that are reported are never really made. I mean, a lot of these coaches have great flowery conversation with kids, talk about how they like their game, like this or that, and a kid takes from that conversation that he's been offered by the school. So I would add just one more even kind of division into those subclassifications.
So do schools always know who they want? Not necessarily. I think that they absolutely make mistakes, just as the recruiting services do. They are probably better at it than the recruiting services, which is why following offers does make a lot of sense. And recruiting services, people criticize them like, well, you changed this kid's rating because he got a bunch of offers. If you were in charge of recruiting rankings, would you do that? Now, you might say, no, but the answer is yes, you should. Because if a bunch of elite schools whose coaches or staffs are paid in the combined hundreds of millions all of a sudden want to offer a kid, they probably see something they really like. So at the very least, you as a recruiting service or recruiting ranking service should go back and review the kid, and maybe you see something that you didn't see prior, or maybe the kid has had a big time growth spurt or something like that. Yeah, the schools make mistakes. I do think they're a little bit ahead of the recruiting service, especially early on in the year. And a lot of that's just because the recruiting staffs are not, you know, at these media outlets are not necessarily so staffed that they can review kids as early as they probably should in order to be able to create rankings. But at the end of the cycle, I think most of them do a pretty good job.
Agree completely. Also, just the sport of football, you really need as much evaluation as possible, and you really need some senior tape on a kid at some point. Now, obviously not for elite five-star prospects. That's not what I'm talking about. But you could just have people emerge, people grow into their body. Kids are obviously different, like, ages within their own grades, and that impacts sometimes how a kid will ultimately develop and what you see out of his junior tape to his senior tape, etc. They're just a lot of information that ultimately becomes more accurate with the more product that you're able to ultimately judge people off of. So, a good question. I particularly, the closer you get to February, the more stock that I put in recruiting rankings and have a little bit more faith that the people that are making the rankings have a broader picture with which to judge the prospect by.
100%. All right. Next one here, Ingram. With all of the changes Taggart is making, what are the chances that we get another rebranding / change in uniforms like we had in 2014? Although it doesn't win games, just curious what your thoughts are and if you have any insight as to what that sort of process entails.
So Marvin Wilson's body composition and uniform talk seem to be the most popular topics of the past 2 to 3 podcasts that we seem to have had here. But I guess this is all based off, you know, all the different pictures and uniform schemes that you see kids take pictures with during the course of their recruiting process. And this is something that we touched on in the past podcast. I don't know, bud. Do you think we see a rebranding or massive change in the uniforms at some point in time in the near future?
I do not. No, I do not think that we're going to have new uniforms in the near future. Nike just made those changes. I think they'll probably want to get, you know, at least a decade out of them.
With the new coaching staff, which existing players have a chance to make an even bigger impact due to being better utilized or taking off the handcuffs, so to speak, with regard to previously being asked to think too much, being downtrodden in a system that is not exciting or fun to them, or perhaps simply just being better focused and or motivated?
All right. As far as the simplicity aspect, Tamari and Terry and Keith Gavin, to me, are fairly obvious there. I think other players who are benefiting surprisingly from getting sort of a fresh look and maybe also are being helped by the increased accountability in the program early on, that's something we're seeing. Again, we don't know if that's going to last as far as the accountability, but at least it seems to be an increased level of accountability, you know, going to class, going to workouts, that type of thing in the early goings, as you would expect. You know, when you have a new coach and a change agent come in, here's two for you. Nasir Upshur, mm-hmm. who I got to tell you, nobody in that program thought was going to do a damn thing.
And completely written off.
Like, I mean, they thought,
not being rude, but yeah, I would say that kid was completely written off.
They weren't sure he was going to be on the roster going forward. Like, just not, they questioned his commitment. They didn't think he was in it. And I'm not saying they were wrong, but with the new staff, I think he has been remotivated. And, you know, with McKitty being out, banged up in spring a little bit, he has taken advantage and made some nice plays in the scrimmage. Did a good job, man. And maybe he can be, I'm not going to say he's going to be a star or anything like that, but maybe he can actually provide some value to this football team. And that would be a surprise based on where he was in his first couple of years in the program. And the other one, who I think we always said long-term, you know, think long-term on this kid. Very raw coming in. Janarius Robinson mm-hmm. making some plays. That's a good thing, man. You know, maybe a new defensive ends coach clicks with him a little bit better than Brad Lawing did. I'm not saying that the new coach is better or worse than Brad Lawing. I'm just saying we've all had different bosses, different managers, different coaches. Sometimes people just see things different ways.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that combined with increased accountability and you know, making sure kids bring the work ethic. Maybe you're going to get something good out of Janarius Robinson as soon as this year. So that'd be great to see. So I'm going to say those two kids. I also think that Florida State's pass protection is going to be better under Greg Frey. I just do. I think he's going to teach it very well, and I think that they're I know they struggled in the scrimmage, but it was a bunch of backups, obviously. When you're running Abdul Bello, Derek Kelly, and Corey Martinez out there at left tackle, left guard, and center. I'm just saying. I think that their protections are going to be a little bit simpler, and I think that a little bit less pressure will be put on them. So I'll go Janarius and Upshur for that question. That's a good question, man. I think that's something, you know, it's important not to prejudge players entirely on what they've done in the past. I mean, look, track record matters. There's no doubt. But it's not impossible for kids to turn their careers around.
Love the work y'all do, and it makes my commutes through the Orlando traffic a heck of a lot better. I'm curious about this sudden West Coast trend that's happening. These kids seem to be thrilled at FSU is offering, and some calling it their dream program. Did Jimbo just ignore California completely, or is this only a thing because of Willie?
Jimbo did not ignore California completely. I think he recruited California at the appropriate level that Florida State should, based on a coach not having like big-time California connections.
Went out and signed a certain quarterback prospect from California that stands out in my mind.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that Jimbo did a fine job in California. I don't know. Like, there's plenty of things I can bash Jimbo for, but that's not one of them. Willie does have more California connections because of his time at Oregon. All these kids call all these major programs a dream offer. There's a certain amount of sort of, you know, myopia here in which Florida State fans see the Florida State prospects call Florida State a dream offer. I'm dead serious here. Like, I'll see a kid say, this is my dream offer, like, to 10 different schools because I have to follow them all nationally. So I wouldn't get too worked up about that. We'll see how many California kids they sign. Certainly getting Woodby on campus and getting him signed, having him do well. He is doing well, by the way, you know, on the field and off the field, it seems like. You know, that's a good thing. They obviously have some connections to some training and developmental programs out there. Getting the kids to visit is big. We also don't know what USC and UCLA are going to do. If USC falters and Chip Kelly doesn't get UCLA rolling, well, then, yeah, I like Florida State's chances to sign one or two of these kids a lot better. The opposite happens, and USC kicks butt, and UCLA seems to be going in the right direction. Well, then all this dream offer stuff probably turns into, guess what, I'm going to stay home and live in California. So that's just kind of how that works.
What was the 7-on group or the development group that you referenced?
Ground Zero.
Ground Zero, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. I'd love to see Florida State continue to be more involved with California kids as long as we don't have like a 3-hour press conference that ties with it like we did with Woodby. I think only good things come from Florida State being involved in elite kids from the West Coast. And look, it's not an uncommon thing. I mean, Miami was at the top of their game. They'd go out and get DJ Williams. Elite kids from the West Coast would come east. Florida certainly has had a lot of success recruiting California periodically. So it's a state that if you're a major program and one of the more appealing programs on the national scene, it's not uncommon to see major East Coast powers be involved with some of the higher rated Florida kids, or excuse me, California kids. And, you know, Florida State, Travis Johnson, certainly Chris Ricks has gone out west and signed some big prospects in the past as well.
No doubt. All right. Next one here. Longtime listener. First time reaching out to you guys. There you go. As always, you can reach us thenolcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @nolcast. I was wondering how the staff is going to handle official visits with the new rule allowing kids to take them in the spring. Is the staff going to facilitate visits this spring, or are they going to try and get kids to use those visits during the season in order to experience the game atmosphere? Keep up the good work. Already rated you guys 5 stars. Awesome. By the way, if you have already rated us 5 stars but did so a couple years ago, you actually can go back and give us another 5 stars. That's a fun fact that people should know. I wasn't even sure I was aware of that. But okay, so I already answered the first part of this question. They are going to take some, or they're going to allow some visits in the spring. I don't think this is a major push by Florida State to do this. Some of the northern schools are doing this because they don't want the kids to come visit when it's snowing, right? I mean, Ann Arbor, Michigan is probably pretty nice in May. I don't know.
Always been a philosophy of a lot of those Big Ten schools. There's a reason why they'd have 22 kids committed by the beginning of the year. Exactly. That's not all weather-based, but you don't want to be competing against You know, you don't want to be Michigan and come down to a final three of Florida State, Miami, and Michigan, and kid take three official visits in late January.
When a lot of these kids don't even own a real jacket.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Really, ultimately, a lot of times the official visit is decided by when the kid's timetable is. And the timetable, you want to be, obviously, have some proximity to that. If a kid's not going to make his decision until February, then having him use an official in spring doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
So the second part of this, I was actually told, is that Florida State is not going to do as many official visits during the season. Check that out. It's kind of interesting, right? They used to do a lot of these. Willie Taggart and staff prefer to spend a lot of time with these kids one-on-one. So they would actually, I think they're going to do like, you know, some official visits during the bye week, but I also think they're going to do some, you know, in December. If you do an official visit on a game weekend, you do get the whole game atmosphere stuff, which is great. But you don't get as much one-on-one time with the coaching staff, with the families, that type of thing, because there's obviously game preparation, pregame speech, postgame stuff, a lot of that kind of thing. So that will be a change. They will do fewer official visits during the year, and they will do more official visits during, you know, the non-game weekend type stuff. That's something I was told. I'm not saying there's a right way or a wrong way to do this. It's just preference.
The last question. Last thing I wanted to know, how giddy would y'all be if Vanilla Ice performed Ninja Rap at the post-game concert? Most fans wouldn't know anything about that song, but it has a special meaning to me, as I saw Ninja Turtle 2 in theaters and would just flip out if he brought that one back. Comment on that. Somebody, Vanilla Ice performed at my college like 10 years ago or so, and not that anybody was writing down his playlist or set list per se, but I don't remember Ninja Rap being broken out at that time.
But you do remember the movie, right?
I too saw Ninja Turtles 2 in theaters, and believe I saw that down in West Palm Beach one summer visiting my grandparents. I remember vividly seeing the movie.
Okay, so a couple things about that movie. First of all, I'd be very excited if he broke out Ninja Rap from Teenage Ninja Turtles 2. Do you remember? Okay, that movie is awesome because it's like I think we've actually referenced this before on the show, so maybe this questioner is referencing that we knew this. When the Super Shredder drinks the ooze, and then he collapses through the dock, and then he's like, oh, he's dead. And all of a sudden, he's like, oh, wait, no, I just drank the ooze, so I'm not dead. And he busts up through the dock, which is pretty cool. Also, what the heck were the names of the two? Were they also turtles? No, I think it was a...
Yeah, what were those things? I know what you're talking about.
The two
about.
Bad guys. It was it was Taka and Razor or something like that.
Taka and Razor. Taka, an oversized snapping turtle, and Razor, a fearsome wolf-like creature.
That's that right there, man. Awesome. I'd be very happy about that. You know what else I'd be happy about? If y'all use Resolution Home Loans for your home loan needs. Resolution Home Loans, Knoll-owned business. Chad reached out to us. He's like, I really want to support the Knollcast, man. I want to connect Knolls with Knolls. Absolutely. When you call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com, you get Shannon. Shannon is Chad's ace. He's the guy you want to deal with. When we talked to Chad, we're like, hey, like, let's set these people up with your best guy. You know, had lunch with them. They sold me, and I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's help y'all advertise on here. They guarantee with their Almost Home program that you're going to close within 15 days of the contracted closing date, or they'll give you $500 off your closing cost. How do they do it? It's their Almost Home program. They eat the cost of the underwriting up front, so before you buy, so you know you're good. Once you find the home, all that stuff is the appraisal, you know, title work, homeowner's insurance. They want you to go with confidence to know what you can get. They want to close you fast. FSUHomeLoans.com. Call 844-FSU-HOMELOANS. And with that, let's get to our buy or sell questions this week, brought to you by Resolution Home Loans.
Absolutely. A popular new feature, great thing that we've been able to add. And thanks again to our friends at Resolution Home Loans for this buy or sell segment. First one, Bud. Does Willie win a national title at FSU before Jimbo wins an SEC title at Texas A&M? Do you buy or sell that idea?
there's not like a clear answer that pops out to me. So this is not like a like an obvious one for me, which makes it a good buy or sell topic, by the way. I'm going to sell because I think it's easier to win a conference title, even in the SEC, than it is to win a national title. So I think that the one is a lot easier to do than the other.
I, too, would sell that. Next one, buy or sell Stanford Samuels III having five or more interceptions this season.
I think he has great natural ball skills. I've seen him pick off plenty of passes as a recruit. I think he's going to be put in position to do so. And, you know, he's a guy you can put all over the field, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and buy. Look, interceptions have a huge random component. So in order for him to get five picks, he's probably got to have, what, 10 to 15 interceptable balls? That's not a word, but you guys get what I'm saying. But if he gets them, if he gets those balls thrown at him, I think he'll pick five of them. So I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Yeah, I too will buy that. I think what you touched on was Keith Samuels is a really talented prospect that you can deploy at different places across the field. And I think what you see with him being used throughout the back end of the secondary, I think Samuels is somebody that will have the opportunities that you referenced there, and wouldn't shock me to see him have somewhere like six, seven, maybe even eight interceptions this season. I think it's a kid that's exceptionally talented and is going to be one of the breakout performers for the defense. Next, buy or sell. Bud, would you buy or sell the idea that four wide receivers in the year with 500-plus receiving yards?
Hard sell. Hard sell, man. Willie Taggart, in his last 4 years, has only had one player per season go over 500. This is a running offense. And look, I normally don't put questions in here that are, to me, like super obvious by ourselves, but I do think that there's a certain amount of like informing the audience that we're going to be doing. You know, this is a running offense for sure. At Western Kentucky in 2013, he had one guy go over and almost two. He had two in 2012. And he had one in 2011. So
if we were to reclassify this at 400 yards, four wide receivers at 400-plus yards.
Okay, receivers, I'm still going to say no on that. If you tell me four players then at 400, then maybe. But I don't think this is going to be an offense that throws for 4,000 yards. I think, you know, 3,000 is going to be better. You want to have a high yards per attempt. And you know, hopefully low turnovers. You know, that's what I'm expecting. I am not expecting that. There are certain ways that offenses control the football, right? You either control it via the short passing game, which is what we did primarily under Jimbo, or you're going to control it via the run game. Willie wants to control it via the run game. So they are going to run the football a lot. I think they're going to probably run it not like twice as often as they pass, but probably 60-40 run to pass. When they pass, they want to create explosive plays via the pass game. They're not going to throw 20 short passes a game. Or there's going to be very few games, in my opinion, in which you see a Willie Taggart quarterback throw the ball more than 40 times. In fact, if you look at it, let's just go game log here. Attempts last year. The high number of attempts for a Taggart offense last year was 35. I'm going to read them off real quick. 27, 33, 30, 35, 22, 27, 13, 15, 13, 13. Granted, some of those were at the backup. I think you can kind of sense a pattern there. 21, 26. Let's compare that to Florida State. 33, 39, 21, 28, 21, 28, 27, 19, 32, 24, 21, 23. Florida State throws the ball more often than Oregon did, despite the fact that Oregon ran a lot more plays. So on a ratio basis, Oregon and under Willie Taggart was running the football more frequently than it was passing. Florida State under Jimbo had a higher pass to run ratio. So I hope that makes sense, and that's a lot of numbers, but good question. I like that. Here's one for you, dude. Two or more punt returns for touchdowns this year.
I think I'm gonna buy this. I hope I'm not being too optimistic here, but I think particularly if there's just a lot of talent back there. A lot of guys that could perform that task at a high level, and I wouldn't shock me at all to see two or more punt returns. taken to the house ultimately. So I will, I'll buy that and look forward to seeing whether or not I'm accurate.
All right. How many teams did this last year? It looks like 15 teams had two or more punt return touchdowns last year. In 2016, it was 11. In 2015, 18 teams did it. In 2014, 16 teams did it. And then
maybe I'm just jaded by the fact, Bud, that I have optimistic hopes that we're actually going to field the punts this year and attempt to take them up the field in a positive manner. So,
oh, you want to advance maybe, the punt?
Maybe I'm just getting overly optimistic by the idea that we're not going to perform air traffic control 40 yards down the field and point to the ball, point where it's going to land. We see it. It's going to land right over there, but I don't feel like necessarily making to that point where I would catch the ball. And, hey, who knows, maybe even turn positive yardage out of it.
I'm going to also buy. I think you're going to have more opportunities for punt returns this year just because they're going to be more possessions in these games. It's not like you're asking them to finish in like the top 1% of the nation. There's a big random component, certainly. But I don't know, maybe top, you know, it's like top 10% of teams, top 15% of teams have done this. You know, tougher would be, can you have a punt return average like over 12? You know, that mm-hmm. that's probably a more representative thing because, you know, there are teams on here. For instance, Boise State in 2013 was second in the nation in average punt return distance at 16 yards. They had no punt return touchdowns. I would rather have that, I think, more consistent returns than just a couple explosive returns because that's sort of hit or miss. But I'm going to go ahead and buy. I'm feeling optimistic this morning. Got some guys back there, you know, like DJ Matthews, like a Levante Taylor who could all do it. Here's one for you. This is interesting. Buy or sell, what DeAndre Francois has been tweeting recently is genuine. Parentheses, do you think it's obvious that he's just sucking up to get the starting role? Can we debut a new option on this? I want to say hold, almost. I'm going to either say hold or sell for now. I think sell for now. I'm not saying that what he's tweeting is not genuine. It does not seem consistent with what he has tweeted over the past several years, which was basically all about him all the time, and not consistent with, you know, his actions as a teammate over the last couple of years. But I can't dismiss the idea that maybe he will change. But it is too early for me to think that he has actually made some sort of turnaround. So I'm going to hold. I'm not buying in yet.
I don't generally make much of what anybody tweets in general, but my personal belief is that maybe there's a first time, an actual realization that James Blackman might be, I don't know if running away with a job is the right way to phrase that, but really making it his. So that may be the inspiration for some of the tweets. Ultimately, nothing that Francois puts out on social media is going to dictate whether or not he's, you know, how he performs on the field or anything else like that. But, I don't want to comment on how genuine the things are. I just will say that, in my opinion, it's not going to matter. And my stance on Francois has been the same that it has for the past 4 or 5 months. And that is that ultimately, I think these two parties go their separate ways at some point in time. So we'll see if and when that happens.
All right. Next, Bailey Hockman have a legitimate chance of being a starter. I think we addressed this in the scrimmage thing. As of now, I am a hard sell on this.
Well, not if we're basing it off playing time. No, or excuse me, not if we're basing it off playing ability. No, he has not pushed to being a legitimate chance to be a starter. Does he have a legitimate chance to be a starter in the fact that he may be the second quarterback on the roster come and injury could occur? Yeah, he's got a chance of starting, but no, his level of play is not going to, at this point in time, is not going to put himself at a place to push for the starting position. Next one, Bud, George Campbell and or Nudy Murray having a breakout year. Well, I disagree with some of the terminology there, but I'll let you comment on the overall thought process of the question, or at least what the general question was to what he's getting to.
How do we define breakout year?
Well, that's what I would say the end of 2016 was probably Murray's, you know, breakout period. But and to compare Campbell and Murray are two. It's just an odd comparison as far as track record and actual productivity on the field.
Yeah, I mean, a Campbell breakout year would be like 10 catches.
Anything. Just give me appearance in 8 or more games with some level of productivity.
Can you play 400 snaps?
That would be a good benchmark for him. I'd take the under on it personally.
Based on injury history, absolutely.
That'd be a great benchmark.
I'm going to sell both these. I really like Naquan Murray based on what I was told about how hard he was working and how he's actually been a leader in the offseason, which is a huge shock compared to what he was prior. But again, this offense is not going to throw the ball as much as Jimbo's offense did. And now he has legitimate competition in terms of the smaller receiver role with DJ Matthews, who I do expect to have a big-time year. All right, last one. We'll get out of here on this. Cam Akers, over or under 1,300 yards?
I'm calling my friends at Resolution Home Loans on this right now, bud, because this is the type of opportunity that you want to have in play where you can get to the line, you see an opportunity, and you want to buy it. This is something that I will buy, and again, hope I'm not being overly optimistic, but is that total yards or 1,300 rushing yards?
I think it's rushing yards. Total yards, absolutely.
I'll still buy it, absolutely. Something that I would feel pretty comfortable with and place a rather high degree of confidence in, obviously barring an injury.
I'm also going to buy. I think that's a good buy. Last year, Freeman at Oregon had 1,475, certainly more competition for carries in the backfield at Florida State, but I think Cam Akers is truly a special back, so I'm going to go ahead and buy.
All right, bud, good little overall update as to where we stand at this point in spring, and just want to thank people for their support of the podcast. Fantastic for us to be able to look and plan for the year upcoming, and we've had a great year. We're having a great year so far. And just want to thank people for their support over the years that we've done this. So it's been a great experience. Look forward to meeting y'all in 10 days or so. And for Bud Elliott and Ingram Smith and our producer Judson, want to thank you for listening to us do yet another episode of the Nolcast.
All right, guys. Take care.